Hello, this is Julian Gerdam from St. Columba's College in Dublin. Look at our blog secenglish.ie for more. And this is the Patterns of Poetry number 3. This time I'm talking about alliteration. I'm not going to do this series alphabetically, but we'll start with A for alliteration. This technique is something that seems to excite many pupils of poetry. It's nice and easy to spot, so easy in fact that it seems almost like bird watching at times. Ooh, look, there's a willow warbler. But when you're thinking about and analysing a poem, you do need to think beyond mere observation and consider exactly what alliteration does, just what its purpose is in a poem. The definition is easy. The repeated use of letters at the start of words or syllables. If you want to be technical, there is consonantal alliteration, big bad boy, or vocalic alliteration, a vowel, such as alphabetic alliteration, whatever that may be. But let's stop being technical and look at a poem. The most highly alliterative great poet of all is surely the Jesuit priest Gerard Manley Hopkins, who incidentally died in Dublin and is buried just a few miles from where I'm talking now in Glasnevin Cemetery. Hopkins was particularly excited by sound in poetry and was strongly influenced by Old and Middle English, in which alliteration is often spectacularly dominant. An example is the poem Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Listen now for the key letter in each alliterative line in Simon Armitage's recent modern English translation. It was Christmas at Camelot, King Arthur's court, where the great and good of the land had gathered, all the righteous lords of the ranks of the round table, quite properly carousing and revelling in pleasure. Hopkins took alliteration to an extreme, and there are few more extreme examples in English poetry than his great sonnet The Windhover, subtitled To Christ Our Lord. Hopkins called it the best thing I ever wrote, which is not quite the language he used to use in his poetry. So here is the extraordinary first sentence, driven along by its alliteration, as well as its rhyme scheme, in which every line rhymes on the ing sound. I caught this morning, morning's minion, kingdom of daylight, dauphin, dappledorn, drawn falcon, and his riding of the rolling level, underneath him steady air, and striding high there, how he rung upon the rein of a wimpling wing in his ecstasy, then off, off forth on swing, as a skate's heel sweeps smooth on a bow bend, the hurl and gliding rebuff the big wind. This really is alliteration, freighted and fruity as a good Christmas cake, being used for a powerful purpose. The sweeping M, D, R, and W letters drive the sentence towards its most distinctive sound, the hissing S of on swing as a skate's heel sweeps smooth on a bow bend. That alliterative S is, and here's your second technical term of this talk, called sibilance, a word which pleasingly explains itself by its own sound. And what is that powerful purpose? It's the exhilarating recreation of a bird of prey, which is itself a metaphor for Christ. Hopkins doesn't just use alliteration for ecstasy. In the dark sonnets written towards the end of his life, he writes, pitched past pitch of grief, more pangs will, schooled at four pangs wilder ring, in which that spitting P sound expresses his spiritual bitterness. Hopkins's language pushes words to an extreme, moving it in fact towards the condition of music. The mere meaning of words isn't enough for him. Their sound needs to do a lot of work too. Hopkins may be an extremist in terms of alliteration, but he's a good place to start when thinking about it. Few poets have produced such powerful poems.